Illinois Public Media, this is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Earlier this year, President Donald Trump said he wanted one big, beautiful bill that renewed tax cuts and clawed money out of social welfare programs. Last month, Republicans in the U.S. House of Representatives narrowly passed the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, which will now be considered by the U.S. Senate. In order to get the legislation through the House, Republicans had to quell some dissent in their caucus. Trump's bill would add $3 trillion to the national debt over the next decade, and that could ultimately be $5 trillion if the changes become permanent. Incidentally, that would swamp by orders of magnitude the cuts claimed by Elon Musk's Doge effort. And this week, the former administration official and Twitter owner came out hard against the legislation. Beyond the debt, the Big Beautiful Bill is expected to cause more than 7 million Americans to lose access to Medicaid and other government-backed health care programs. The Yale School of Public Health and others have warned that all those changes could lead to more than 51,000 preventable deaths every year. Here in Illinois, the nonpartisan KFF Health News estimates that would mean a 16% cut in federal money over the next decade, about $38 billion. And state leaders told me on the show earlier this week, Illinois does not have the money to make up for that. We asked members of our texting group about this. Karen and Simpson said, "I see the budget bill as negative for every part of our communities across the country, other than the extremely wealthy. I'm concerned about cuts to Medicaid and SNAP benefits, among many other parts of the bill." Thank you for that message, Karen. That's just what we're talking about today. Our show is in two parts. First, we're going to get into the Medicaid and healthcare provisions. Later, we'll talk about agriculture and food assistance, part of the legislation. If you have questions about this big, beautiful bill, our phones are open throughout the hour today. The number is 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Joining us now to talk more about this is Joan Elker, Executive Director of the Center for Children and Families and Research Professor at Georgetown University's McCourt School of Public Policy. Joan, welcome back to the 21st Show.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us, Paula Worthington, Senior Lecturer at the University of Chicago's Harris School of Public Policy. Paula, welcome back to you as well.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
So the cuts to Medicaid in this legislation amount to, what, $800 billion. Joan Elker, that's one in four people in Illinois who are on Medicaid. Just talk broadly about what those costs, what those cuts could mean for people, what that actually would look like in practice.
Sure. Yeah. So these are really the largest cuts, to Medicaid that Congress has ever considered imposing, and it would really affect every state across the country. In Illinois, as you mentioned, there are about 3 million people covered by Medicaid. You know, this Medicaid is really the backbone of many parts of our healthcare system. So, for example, Medicaid is paying for 40% of births in Illinois. It's covering more than a third of children. And at the other end of life, Medicaid is paying for almost 70% of the care for nursing home residents. So Medicaid is playing a lot of different roles here. And as you mentioned, the state of Illinois, it's estimated would lose over the 10-year period $38 billion. That's not an amount of money that any state can make up, particularly with an aging population. There are other estimates that over 500,000 people in Illinois would lose their Medicaid coverage. So this would have a very dramatic impact.
What do you make of that 51,000 deaths annually figure? I think that was Yale University and University of Pennsylvania.
Yeah, I mean, look, we know that health insurance is the price of admission to our healthcare system. And if you don't have health insurance, you're not going to see a good show. So that's what's been so important about Medicaid over the years, but also the Affordable Care Act, which passed in 2010. And this is really becoming clearer and clearer that this is a sneak attack on the Affordable Care Act, both the Affordable Care Act marketplaces, as well as the Medicaid expansion for adults. And that's where researchers found this dramatic reduction in mortality. And that's not super surprising because we have hundreds of studies showing the impact of Medicaid on people's health and improving their ability for folks with cancer to access treatment, for folks with mental health or substance use disorders to access the services they need. So this really is a life and death issue.
Paula Worthington with the University of Chicago, let me bring you to the conversation now. Put Medicaid in the context, the bigger context of the Illinois budget, and you know what sort of hit, what that hit would mean for Illinois spending and how that affects Illinois people.
Sure, thank you. You know, Medicaid is the single largest expenditure undertaken at the state level. Primary and secondary education typically comes next. Much of that spending is supported by federal dollars, as is well understood, I think. Medicaid is a federal-state partnership kind of program. And in the abstract, it basically is a partnership in which the federal government provides at a minimum half the funds needed to support the program. And then states with essentially lower levels of resources, lower levels of per capita incomes typically have a more generous support coming from the federal government. Illinois tends to be, Illinois is a relatively wealthy state. And so outside of COVID times, outside of recessions, the baseline federal support for the state of Illinois and its Medicaid program runs just a shade over 50% typically. So, you know, this is a lot of money. You know, total Medicaid spending in our state was $33.4 billion in state fiscal year 2024. And so that's, you know, on the order of 25% of the total for the state. So the kinds of policy changes and cuts that are envisioned in parts of this one big beautiful bill are going to chisel away in different ways at some of that federal money that's coming in to support the state. So, for example, the proposal from the House goes after the practices of states to use medical provider taxes as a way of kind of goosing how much reimbursable spending they're doing, and that drives additional federal reimbursements. So under HR 1, those kinds of taxes would be certainly, you can't increase them anymore, and maybe there would be some elements of reductions, and that could have a big impact on the money that the state is able to acquire from the federal government. And then, as Joan mentioned, you know, thinking a little more about the Affordable Care Act expansion population, you know, those are individuals in the state of Illinois, that's between 700,000 and 800,000 individuals, and there you might expect the provisions related to work requirements to have a big impact on those individuals and potentially lead to decreased coverage here in the state of Illinois.
Joan, well, maybe that's a good point to ask about that, because I think a lot of people hear the idea of work requirements for able-bodied adults, at least, and they think, well, that's reasonable. What's wrong with that? I wonder what your perspective is on that.
Yeah, great question. And something I've been working on for many years since the first Trump administration, when this is really their marquee policy. And as you say, I mean, I can completely understand that government policy has an interest in supporting work. But unfortunately, work requirements are going to do the opposite of that. We know from a couple of states that have tried these that they don't work. They actually take away health insurance from folks who need it, and they have no impact on the unemployment rate. And that's because if you want to support people being able to work, you've got to address their barriers to work, right? Things like childcare and the lack of jobs and the lack of training. And in some cases, people's health conditions are barriers to them working. And so actually accessing health insurance is going to support work And unfortunately, this bill will result in millions of people who really need this coverage losing it.
Well, it's interesting because you said, you know, people have health issues or childcare. I think what the talking point you often hear from the administration and people who support it on this is, well, it's able-bodied, childless adults, right? I guess this is like the, you know, 44-year-old guy sitting home playing video games rather than working, right? I mean, is that a realistic understanding of who is benefiting from this portion of the Medicaid program?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, so a couple of things to say about that. First of all, when you look at this expansion group that will be subject to these rules, they've actually made them more punitive than we've ever seen before. They've included 50 to 64-year-olds. So you have a lot of folks in that category. The majority are women who are caregiving for family members or folks who have, you know, starting to have some serious chronic health conditions in those years. So that is not an accurate description at all. And I guess the other piece of the puzzle here is, look, there's a whole long list of exemptions, right? Like parents with dependent children will be exempt. And people with medically frail people will be exempt. Okay, well, how is that going to happen? And this is what we've learned in real life. States have to spend millions of dollars on private consultants like Deloitte, an international corporation, has made a lot of money in the state of Georgia implementing their work requirement, just wrapping people up in red tape. And unfortunately, government doesn't always get these complicated and frankly invasive questions about people's lives correct. And that's what's going to be required to set up this extraordinarily complex policy, which, by the way, they just moved up the implementation date when they went to the House floor. So states are going to have very little time to get ready for this.
Paula, is there any chance? I mean, I sort of tipped my hand about this in the introduction because we spoke with the House Speaker and Senate President on the program earlier this week. But is there any chance Illinois can hold harmless some of the people in these programs?
Fiscally speaking, I think the answer is no. The state of Illinois has a trigger law, which basically says when the federal medical assistance percentage, which is the federal support for state spending on Medicaid, when that support drops below 90% for the expansion population, the trigger law basically says that the Illinois program is going to discontinue coverage for those individuals. You might debate the wisdom of having such a trigger law in place, but it is in place. And, you know, actually, if Illinois had to actually cover those individuals on its own, based on the regular FMAP of around 50%, you know, you're talking about a several billion dollar impact on the state's budget. So I think there are multiple pressure points here on this Affordable Care Act expansion population. The work requirements is one key component. The potential decrease in the FMAP, the federal support coming to support that population. I think it's also, you know, politically and culturally difficult make the arguments to protect the interests of that group because of what, you know, you basically said just a few minutes ago, the stereotype of single adults without dependents. You know, why shouldn't they be working? Why should they be covered under this program? The reality is that many of those individuals, as Joan indicated, are a little older. They may have caregiving responsibilities, chronic conditions starting to emerge in middle age and early old age. In fact, spending per Affordable Care Act expansion enrollee is higher than for per adult spending, the adults who are not either aged or disabled. So it suggests that population is truly needier than the others.
We need to take a break in about a minute here. Let me share a couple of more messages we got from people in our texting group. John in Urbana said, I see it as very negative for the country, even though it will not affect me personally very much. I find most objectionable cuts to Medicaid and SNAP. Republicans have been claiming that tax cuts will pay for themselves since Ronald Reagan in the 1980s. This has never proven true, and I don't expect this time will be any different. We also heard from Kelly in Whiteheath, said it's not just a destructive spending plan that also increases the huge deficit. Trump's tax cuts for the 1% has already created that will then cause sequestration and huge cuts to Medicare. But the addition of the neutering of the contempt of court orders made retroactive for the orders Trump's already violating. No AI regulations for 10 years. We may talk about that in a future show. She says none of this has to do with a budget. They're particularly horrifying and make Trump above the law. All right. If you want to join us today, we'd love to hear your perspective on this. Maybe you think some of these are a good idea. I'd love to hear why you think so. 800-222-9455. 800-222-9455 is the number. We're going to continue talking about some of these healthcare aspects of the bill in the next few minutes after the break with Paula Worthington from the University of Chicago and Joan Elker from Georgetown University's McCourt School of Public Policy. And then later in the program, we'll be talking about some of the agriculture and food assistance provisions in this proposal. Again, 800-222-9455 to join us. This is The 21st Show. It's the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about President Trump's Big Beautiful Bill. That is the actual name of the legislation, the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, and what it means for Illinoisans with Paula Worthington, who is a senior lecturer at the University of Chicago's Harris School of Public Policy, and Joan Elker, executive director of the Center for Children and Families and research professor at Georgetown University's McCourt School of Public Policy. We have a piece of tape here. This is how Congresswoman Nikki Budzinski characterized this legislation in a message she posted on Facebook.
In the middle of the night, with hopes that no one was watching, Republicans in Congress passed their disastrous tax package. We already know this is going to rip healthcare away from 13.7 million Americans, cut food assistance for hungry kids, and raise costs across the board for the poorest 10% of American families. In our district, 216,000 people rely on Medicaid. With these cuts, their coverage is at risk. There is no way other to say this. It's a betrayal of the working and middle class.
All right, if you want to join us today, 800-222-9455 is the number. That's 800-222-9455. Joan Elker, one of the talking points we've heard from the administration here is that this is going to prevent, you know, spending on people who are undocumented or do not have legal status, immigrants who do not have legal status. You've done some fact-checking on that. What did you find?
Yeah, this is one of the biggest pieces of misinformation we're seeing around this bill. So Medicaid, federal Medicaid, does not offer coverage to undocumented people. That's the bottom line here. There's one exception to that, which we'll come back to, but the federal government just doesn't pay for that. And there are some states like Illinois, and primarily this has been related to children, actually, to undocumented children, but in some states, adults have used their own funds to pay for coverage for those folks. And the bill imposes a penalty. We talked about that earlier, and especially for Illinois with your trigger law, it seems there would be no question the state would have to drop that coverage for undocumented children and adults. So this is really a talking point for them. It has nothing to do with why Medicaid costs are going up. And ironically, the one way that the federal government does spend some money on undocumented people is by giving hospitals reimbursement for emergencies. So, you know, we have a law in this country that if you show up in the hospital, you're having a medical emergency, the ER cannot turn you away. So the woman's not going to have the baby on the sidewalk. The man is not going to have the heart attack on the sidewalk. They're going to be in the ER. And so hospitals actually get some money for that, but the bill doesn't touch that. which just speaks to how this is really about a tactic to fire up their base and just not factually correct about what Medicaid funding goes for.
Joan, I'm glad you mentioned hospitals, because I think that raises another important point here that I'd like to ask you to talk about, which is the importance of this funding. You know, we often talk about this as individual people losing healthcare coverage, but it's really systemically, it plays a role in the entire healthcare system, right? Especially in rural areas, what are known as safety net hospitals. Can you talk about how that could be affected by these changes?
Sure. Great question. We've done a lot of research, and Medicaid is actually more important in rural communities. And we just recently did a report on maternal and infant health, and Medicaid pays for 40% of births nationwide, but in rural hospitals, it's paying for 47% of births. And, you know, we had a Louisiana hospital representative speak on our webinar. He said one of his hospitals is 75% Medicaid births. Now, if you're in one of these rural communities and you lose your hospital, and the majority of rural hospitals already don't have labor and delivery units, those are vanishing. That community, it doesn't matter if you're on Medicaid or you have private insurance, is not going to be able to grow and thrive without a safe place for moms to have babies.
All right. If you want to join us today, again, 800-222-9455, 800-222-9455. Paula Worthington, can we talk about one other aspect of this legislation? It's not really related to healthcare in as much as I guess everything is related to healthcare in this, but there's been a lot of attention on these SALT caps. This is state and local taxes. This is where people used to be able to get bigger deductions for paying state and local taxes like income tax, property tax. It was limited to $10,000 in the first Trump administration. This is mainly an issue in big blue states, New York, California, New Jersey, and Illinois. Do you have a sense of how the proposed changes here might affect Illinoisans and how many Illinoisans?
Sure. Thanks for that question. I can quickly tell you, I don't have a back of the envelope answer on how many Illinois taxpayers would be affected by the proposed changes. What I can point out is that under the proposed legislation here from H.R. 1, the cap on state and local tax deductions is raised for households with incomes below $500,000. So in that sense, that feels like something, okay, we're going to remove part of the cap. But the proposal also tries to limit the ability of states to develop complicated workaround proposals that basically were a way for certain kinds of professionals essentially to use their pass-through business status as a way of getting around that $10,000 cap. And so there's actually some complexity there in terms of who would be affected by these proposals and what the distributional impacts of that would be. You are correct, absolutely, to point out that this is a topic of great interest to residents and taxpayers in high-tax states like the ones you mentioned. And so, you know, at this point, I think, you know, it's a little bit of a wait and see exactly how the Senate is going to treat those provisions when they take on the legislation. And then we'll have to see, you know, whether loosening the cap in some way makes state and local taxpayers in blue states essentially, you know, they've loosened the cap. So that helps them out and makes them more willing to support their own states and local governments with their tax payments.
Joan Alker, you know, we're coming to the end of our time together, and I should say we're going to be talking about food assistance later in the program. So putting a pin in that, what else are you tracking in this legislation that might affect children and families?
Yeah, a couple of things. So I think it's really important to look at the bill in its totality and how much of a burden it will be for states. they simply will not be able to make up these funds when you look at both the Medicaid cuts as well as the SNAP cuts, which will for the first time require states to put up a significant chunk of their own funding. And this is extremely problematic for children. I think Paula said this up front, you know, after Medicaid, which is already the largest health insurer for children, K through 12 education is usually next up in a state's budget. So governors are not going to have good choices here in terms of cutting things that will impact children across the board.
And what do you make of this? I don't like to do predictions, and I know a lot of public policy experts don't do predictions, but what do you foresee happening as this proceeds through the Senate? I mean, in terms of the dynamics of what people are interested, what they're concerned about, what lawmakers, I mean, and Joan, I'll put that question to you.
Yeah, it's been really fascinating as somebody who's worked on Medicaid for 25 years now to see how important Medicaid is to the voters of all political parties. We saw the president's own pollster come out and say, don't cut Medicaid. Your voters don't want this. So we've seen a lot of internal tension within the Republican Party about these cuts. They know they're politically tough. You've seen Senator Josh Hawley speak out about this, you know, not necessarily someone right up front you would have thought taking a lead here. So there's a lot of tension in the party between the sort of newer populist wing and those that have, you know, it's been sort of their bread and butter for some time to try to cut Medicaid, to deride folks as being unworthy and lazy, as you mentioned, the guys laying on the couch. And that's a tension because, as Steve Bannon himself said, there are a lot of MAGA voters getting covered by Medicaid. So I don't know where this is going to land, but I think everybody realizes that the political stakes here are very high.
Joan Elker is executive director of the Center for Children and Families and a research professor at Georgetown's McCourt School of Public Policy. Paula Worthington is a senior lecturer at the Harris School of Public Policy at the University of Chicago. Thank you both for sharing your expertise with us today on the 21st Show.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you.